Cena. I'll always love you.
Welcome everyone to Xena Newber's podcast, aka XNU. My name is Cass and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those of you who've been following this podcast so far. We're now up to episode number 76. This podcast show is for all the Xena and Uber subtext stories that are out there that have not been given a voice. So welcome back, everyone. Welcome to another XNU show. I hope everyone is doing very, very well. I myself am sitting here with a bag of ice on both kneecaps because I've just come back from my run and oh my God. Can I tell you now? Ow. Just ow. Don't have to say any more on that subject. We're going to say the song snippet this week you've heard before. It's Taste by Lorna Vallings. On YouTube, it's the Smallville characters of Clark and Lana Lang. And yeah, it's quite unique. And I figured it was a very apropos for this episode because I'm going to insert here, newsflash. This is going to be the official disclaimer, i.e. I forewarned you before about having disclaimer when I have a episode that might be of an intense nature. So at this point, I'm going to read a little disclaimer that I made up. Okay, disclaimer. The context of this week's show contains scenes of an intense, intimate encounter with our two main characters. You are forewarned not to operate heavy machinery or any machinery that might cause you bodily harm when you lose focus and begin to fantasize and visualize the scene. You have been forewarned. This week's episode has the coupling of our two favorite girls after their wedding, and where they consummate their second wedding, so to speak. And I'm going to leave it at that, so when we get to that part, you'll understand exactly what I mean. But you have been forewarned, so do not put this on your home stereo on the loudspeakers so the neighbors can hear it or the kids come home from school and find you listening to this. Do not drive while you're listening to this episode. Do not operate any machinery, because if you crash and burn, or if you sew your fingers off, or whatever it is you do, I'm not responsible. So, there you go. All right, we've got a lot of announcements to make on this week's show, and so we're going to get right into it. Okay, on the book review this week, we have quite a few book reviews. So bear with me as I read through about three of them. So it's feast or famine with you guys. One minute I don't get any, and then the next I get a few. But I'd rather have, you know, the feast than the famine. So here we go. The first one is, and this is not by my normal book wench. This is by another fellow, how should I say it? She's not a book wench, but she's working up to becoming the wench, so she's the book hoe for the moment. Thanks, Laura. It's called Accidental Love by B.L. Mitta. And this story is online, and her site is at http://blmiller.net/accidental/al1.html, which just... The link will be on my show notes. Go to my blog spot, and it'll link on. And the review says, "What happens when love is based on deception? Can it survive discovering the truth?" Accidental Love is a captivating story between Rose Grayson, a destitutely lonely young woman, and Veronica Cartwright, head of a vast family empire and extraordinarily rich. Now, personally, I've read this story, and it is one of my favorite stories to read. I do go back every couple of years and go back and read it because it is quite a good story. And the other one that she sent is Always and Forever by Lynn Dennison. Now, this one's not online, but you can buy this from Amazon or Boldstroke or any of those bookstores. And it says, singer-songwriter Shan Delaney has struggled for years to make life for herself and her 10-year-old son, Corey. Her career is just starting to take off when Shan's older sister, Liz, asks for help. Shan's been estranged from her family for over 10 years due to an argument with her father. Now, Liz begs Shan to return and help look after him while he undergoes surgery. With reservations, Shan agrees to help, hoping she can mend the breach with her family and introduce Corey to his grandfather. Shan's reservations of returning home are not completely concerned with her father, but with the object of her youthful angst. The girl next door who broke Shan's heart is now happily married and no longer a part of Shan's thoughts. But when Shan arrives home, there is a new girl next door who turns Shan's world upside down. So those are two from my book ho, Laura. So thank you for that. And now my book wench has sent me one in. Thank you, Heather. And it's called Chance by Grace Lennox. And it's chock full of unforgettable characters. Chance is a sexy, funny, touching story of two women who, in finding themselves, also find one another. At 26, Chance Delaney decides her life isn't working, so she swaps it for a different one. On a quest for adventure, meaning and a girlfriend, she finds herself transported from her safe job in San Francisco gay and lesbian bookstore to number one on the charts as lead vocalist for the all-women band Virgin Blessing. An instant celebrity, Chance has no shortage of sexual partners, yet the woman of her dreams, songwriter Lila Wilde, won't have anything to do with her after just one passionate night. Chance's friendship with charismatic bass guitarist Lucretia, the band's resident heartbreaker, is strictly platonic, but how long can it stay that way when her body has its own agenda? So that's from my book, Wench. And I don't know where you can get that one. I haven't looked, but I'll put a link on my show notes to find out where that one can be purchased. All right. On the movie review that my movie wench has sent me, Pam, thank you. She has Drifting Flowers, and the synopsis says, from the talented director of Spider Lilies comes this eloquent narrative about three lesbians in different stages of life, each experiencing earth-shattering love. And the review is, simply put, Drifting Flowers is an alluring Taiwanese love story skillfully woven together in three parts. Each set in a different time period, the story's heroines unabashedly seek their true identities in balance with the worlds in which they live. In the first scenario, 8-year-old Miego is literally the eyes for her blind sister, Jing, a responsibility she loves to have. Every night, after school, she walks her big sister to a singing gig at a local bar. One night, a new accordion player named Diego joins the backup band. Both Miego and Jing soon fall for the suave Butch Dyke, and a bittersweet love causes friction for all. The second scenario is a beautiful story of loss and rekindled friendship. Lily quietly struggles along with Alzheimer's, longing for the day when her missing girlfriend, Ocean, will walk through the door. Instead, her long-lost cross-dressing pseudo-husband, reminiscent of her lover, shows up on Lily's doorstep. Their fragmented friendship grows beautifully into an inseparable bond that tugs at the heart. Coming full circle, the third segment features Diego during her teen years, fighting her traditional family, binding her breasts, and falling in love for the first time. Brilliant director Zero Chu, Spider Lilies, deftly merges this bittersweet personal journeys as they navigate finding their place in the ebbs and flows of life. Taiwanese with English subtitles. So, there you go.
Initializing process. Oh, crap.
And now into our computer section, or websites, as we should say. For all of those who have not had a chance to go over to the Lucy and Renee HQ website, I'm just giving you the update that she has changed link sites. The new address is now at lucyandreneehq.fanfusion.org. So I'll have a link on my show notes. Please check out her website. It has a new update. Her old host was super slow and had lack of support, so she moved it to this one called Fan Fusion. and she'll be at that site for a while. But and she's also planning on buying a domain so she can prepare for you guys for some changes on that as well. And then the next site that I would like for you guys, and I'm recommending, the next site we have is called a fanfic review site, and it's called, at the blogspot, it's called www.fanficrev.blogspot.com, and it's a fanfiction review site focusing on fanfiction and unpublished original online fiction. And on the little email that they ask me to announce themselves on the show, it says who we are and why we do this. After reading fanfiction for a while, one comes to realize that there is some fanfiction work out there. One also comes to realize that there is some really bad work out there. Our goal is to help you, the fanfic reader, to find something that you might find enjoyable. If you have a review you'd like to submit, send an email to fanficreview@gmail.com. We'll accept reviews for fandom, universe, any sexual orientation, pretty much anything. We do not review our own work or the work of friends. Please keep those rules in mind. So, I took a look at it. It's got some pretty good reviews in there. It tells you the truth one way or the other about fanfics. And has quite a long listing in there for Xena and Ubers all the way through the Advocate, the different writers for the labels. B.L. Miller, Bad Girls, Conqueror, Cool Barn, Crimson, Fingersmith, Incognito, Jelly. There's a lot of Mavis Applewater. There's a lot of... writers out there that they have reviewed for, so please have a look at their site. And once again, that's at www.fanficrev.blogspot.com, and I'll have a link on my show notes for you for that one.
Come and get.
All right, and on to the normal Renee news and Xena news. Over on ReneeO'Connor.net, the latest news she has up there is that Renee will be appearing on Braveheart Women on Wednesday, September 9th, which was today. The panel talks with Renee O'Connor and Are You a Warrior Princess? Learn the Right Questions for Change. And that will be on http://tv.braveheartwomen.com. So at time of this posting, which will be Wednesday for you guys in the States, you'll be able to see that. For the other ones, sorry, too late. But can't help that I'm on the other side of the world. Over on Lucy and Renee updates on the Creation Net website, it says Lucy has joined with Paw Justice, a New Zealand organization that has formed to help deal with problems of animal abuse and neglect, with a petition to increase the maximum jail sentence for offenders that seriously mistreat our animals. Only New Zealanders can sign the petition, but anyone can buy the shirt. The PayPal function will be set up next week. And on the site, it shows a big logo of what their insignia is going to be. It says Paw Justice. And there's a picture of Lucy in there with the two boys and her new haircut. So have a look.
Come and get.
And over on talkingxena.yuku.com, in the forum in there, they have a Bitch Slap special, a podcast show. And it's about the over at Movie Meltdown, and it has the shows, that is it. It says Movie Meltdown Bitch Slap Special, featuring interviews with the stars of Bitch Slap, Aaron Cummings and America Olivio, where you can hear the podcast of the Sisterhood of the Traveling Push-Up Bra, episode 38. So check it out. I'll have a link on my show notes for that. And you can also check it out on Talking Xena, the forum for all the Xena information. And I just have to put this in here. I really, really do, so bear with me. But I've got an email from one of the listeners. And once again, it was my movie wench, Pam, so I have to say thank you to Pam. But she let me know that the story that I wrote, as you all know, is When Do You Know?, is being hosted over on the Athenaeum. And she told me, Cass, did you happen to know, you know, congratulations, you were one of the top 25. So I decided to trot on over there and have a look at the Athenaeum. And sure enough, the most read story of the week was my story, number one. And that was for 1 week between August 24th and August 30th. And then for the second week again, It was the number one between August 31st and September 6th. My story was the second, the first number one read story of the week. And I am, like, so totally stoked. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You guys have made my millennium. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate everybody who's gone over there and read that story. You have no idea. I'm so, like, totally happy. I'm doing the happy dance. Once I take the ice pack off my knees, I will. I'll do the happy dance. I'm so totally stoked. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, everyone who read the story. And even if you didn't read it through the XNU site and you just came across it on the Athenium and you come to my site and you're listening to my show now, thank you. Thank you, thank you. I really appreciate it. And I'll be putting out more stories as I can write them. My little fingers right away. So, but thank you. So that's, I just needed to say that and, you know, reach behind my little, you know, shoulder and pat myself on the back because I'm, like, totally stoked. But anyway, enough with me. Enough with the announcements. We're going to get into this show where you are hankering for this disclaimer to find out exactly what the context is. So, on with the show.
Come and get
me. The Conqueror Series, Tale 3, Time's Fell Hen by the late L.J. Moss. Chapter 44. A mighty flame follows a tiny spark. I woke to an empty bed, which put me in a bad humor rather promptly. The sort of day the weather indicated it might become didn't help to improve my attitude any. A heavy fog hung over the village, leaving me unable to even see the ground. It was early and would probably burn off after the sun had risen higher in the sky, but just then it felt as though I floated in a house amongst the clouds. Gabrielle had left a note for me on the table in the dining area. She had risen early and went off to make a trip to Artemis's temple. It wasn't unusual behavior for her, and considering that she did leave me a note, I decided to be forgiving about her absence. Besides, she had a great deal less to drink than I did last night. Going to sleep as early as we did, she must have been wide awake and waiting impatiently in the dark for Apollo's chariot to take flight. I, on the other hand, had head the size of all Greece from all the drink I'd imbibed. After a morning cleanup, I dressed and looked out the window again. The mist had already begun to lift. Perhaps the day would turn out clear after all. I heard muffled voices and quiet laughter outside on the balcony. Thinking Gabrielle had decided to visit with someone out there, I headed that way. I'm certain surprise registered on my face when I saw Celine and Prax sitting on my balcony furniture as though they belonged there.
"Hi there, big sister," Celine said.
"What are you two doing here?"
I asked in not-so-polite fashion.
"You've got a hangover, don't you?"
Celine grinned at me, but at least Prax had the decency to jump to her feet, recognizing my station.
"Forgive us, Lord Conqueror. We only wanted to wait out here until you and the Queen awoke. I wanted to be the first to tell Queen Gabrielle that I passed the physical test administered by Captain Effany this morning."
"I'm sure she'll be thrilled to hear it. How did you two get up here, anyway?"
I asked, leaning over the railing to see the ground at least 80 hands below us.
"We climbed," Prax answered. "Celine's actually getting quite good."
Celine beamed at me, and I believed there to be a touch of triumph in that expression. Perhaps too much so for my liking.
"See that you don't break your neck before we get to Corinth."
I know I sounded rather testy, but my head pounded and I desperately wanted a hot cup of strong tea. But I had no idea how much tea Gabrielle put in the pot. The last time I tried to make it myself, the brew came out of sort of like muddy water with about the same taste.
"Yes, sister dear,"
Celine muttered. At least it sounded like that to me.
"What did you say?"
I glared at her. She must have realized that she had crossed a line.
I said, looks like the day's going to be clear.
"Uh-huh,"
I answered, turning back to face Prax. "Sorry to disappoint you, but if you're looking for Gabrielle, you're in the wrong place. She went off to the temple at first light." Prax jumped out of her chair again.
"But I thought she was with you."
"No," I said slowly. For her to be with me, that would require that she was actually be present, which she is not.
"You mean she's alone?"
"I'm not really sure, but..." The oddest thing happened then. The girl fairly jumped off the balcony railing, hopping from branch to branch until she was very quickly gone from our sight.
Celine and I simply looked at one another. She's your friend, I said.
You think this guard thing between her and Gabrielle is going to work out?
She asked. I think Gabrielle will have her thrown into the dungeon inside of 6 moons if the girl doesn't relax a tad.
Celine laughed. I know what you mean, but Gabrielle's pretty patient. I mean, she puts up with you after all.
You should be on the stage, you know. Perhaps I should send you off to the Performing Arts Academy in Athens. Stop talking and make me some tea. She laughed again, ignoring me much the same way as Gabrielle usually did.
Oh, did Gabrielle leave the house and not making you morning tea?
The tea!
I glared again, rubbing my temples. You're not much of a morning person. Has anyone ever told you that?
Actually, never. I replied to her wide-eyed expression. Usually, I don't stop hearing what a sensitive and compassionate woman I am first thing in the morning. She just stared at me for a long moment. Then she laughed loudly.
Yeah, right. Right before you run them through.
Pretty much.
We both laughed this time. We sat down and enjoyed our tea together. I remember thinking that having Celine around would keep me on my toes. She would be a breath of fresh air in Corinth, if not a shock to the system. She had matured in an amazing fashion over the last couple of moons. She may have had my physical build, but she had Gabrielle's temperament. She had developed the ability to laugh at life. That attitude would take her far, of that I was certain. Whereas our little mirror looked and acted just like I had at her age. Gods above. The only way to tell that the girl was truly Gabrielle's daughter was by those emerald green eyes. I wondered if the tyke would be able to master Kingsmen the way Gabrielle had. I humorously wondered at what my advisors would think about the new family that was soon to descend upon her estate. I had a feeling their life would never again be the same in that large old palace. Addendum to the Lord Carker's manuscript. Separate parchment. Added, in Xena, the Lord Carker's presence by Queen Gabrielle of Potidaea.
Oh, God, Sprax! Don't do that! I said to my new guard, stopping short of slapping her in the arm. I turned around and there she was, standing silently beside me. I believe my heart nearly stopped beating.
But Captain Effany just told me this morning that part of a guard's job is to be stealthy and silent.
To the enemy, Prax, not to me.
Oh, you shouldn't really go out alone, though, Your Highness.
I chuckled. Look around us. I'm never alone. There are at least 20 members of the Royal Guard, Empire, and Amazon around us. Prax looked around, and I knew that even with her keen eyes, she could probably only glimpse about half the guards. Her cheeks reddened.
Sorry about that. I guess I was just a little... I don't know.
Over-eager? She smiled and nodded. It was as though I spoke to a completely different person. She no longer even looked at me with anger smoldering in her eyes, and she had done for so many days. Suddenly, I found it easy to like the young woman walking beside me. Look, if we're going to have this work, Prax, we're going to have to create some guidelines. First off, I will accept that you're a personal bodyguard, shall we say. I promise I won't try to ditch you anywhere. Much. She laughed appropriately.
Effany told me that you've eluded your guards on more than one occasion. She appeared rather embarrassed by the notion.
Yes, well, I promised Xena I wouldn't be doing that again, so you're safe there. It will be your choice, but I think that once we arrive in Corinth, you should live in the palace
on the same floor as you and the Lord Conqueror?
I'll think about that one. Next, when Xena or Effany are with me, I may excuse you. I quickly held up my hand. I could tell that she was about to say something. And no argument from you over any of these ground rules. Agreed? She stopped abruptly and nodded her head.
Yes, Your Highness.
Good. One other thing, Prax. As my personal guard, you'll be privy to many conversations of a most private nature. Things that others should perhaps not know about for one reason or another. Nothing you can hear can be repeated. To anyone. Is that understood?
You can depend on me to be discreet.
Lastly, I reserve the right to add or amend any rules as I see fit. Agreed?
But...
I stopped walking and looking up at her.
Yes, Your Highness.
She answered. I felt a little sorry for her.
She looked as though she was a child and had just stolen her favorite toy. How are you with children?
You mean little kids?
I almost laughed out loud at the look on her face. It reminded me of the first time I saw one of Anya's little girls wrap her tiny arms around Zina's neck. Don't panic. I just don't want you scaring my daughter, Amira. I intend on having her with me during the day as much as possible.
I see.
I think all of this can work, Prax. You just need to relax a little.
I know it can be rather intense, but it's truly something I'm working on. It's hard, though.
I understand Yupan's been tutoring you. One of the first things he taught me was patience and perseverance.
Oh, yeah. I've learned an awful lot already, but, well, you see, I thought that maybe, I mean, you wouldn't have to do much, of course. I know how busy you are. Then there are positions to consider.
Okay, stop. You're making me dizzy, and I have no idea what you're trying to say.
Sorry. I'm not usually this. I guess the whole day has been kind of exciting for me. I feel like I'm turning my life around, and, well, it's all new.
I understand better than you think. Just take a deep breath and start over. She took in a breath, slowly letting it out.
I was hoping, actually, Master Yupan first suggested the idea that you might be my mentor for learning Master Yupan's way.
Her request stunned me into a few long moments of silence. When I finally found my voice, I had no idea what to say. Oh, Prax, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a teacher. I'm still a student of the way myself.
But Master Yupan says that you're his greatest student.
He flatters me, but still, I don't.
Could you at least think about it? Please? I can't think of anyone better to teach me these principles that Master Yupan talks about. You see, from the first, once I got past all my anger, when I looked at you, I saw, well, I saw the kind of person I wanted to become.
If her request dumbfounded me, this latest revelation did as much to paralyze me. It also dawned on me as to why Prax had wanted to be my personal guard so badly. Prax, does this have any tie to why you choose to become my personal guard? She hung her head and dug her booted foot into the soft reddish dirt.
I figured it was the best way I could serve you, keep a promise I made to Artemis, but at the same time be as close as possible to you, to learn from you.
But why me? I'm not complaining. I'm really awfully flattered, but I'm a little surprised considering what we've gone through.
My mother once told me that in order for me to be the best at something, I needed to be instructed by the best. When it comes to the way, you are the best, and I don't mean just because Master Yupan says so. I know you're the best because of the things that I've seen you say and do, the way you act and the way you think, the way you treated me. I think you're the best, and I want to learn from you.
I truly don't know what to say, Prax. Thank you for the gracious compliment, but I'm nothing special, and I'm certainly not the best.
Don't you see? That's what makes you the best. Master Yupan said if you thought you were, you probably wouldn't be.
I chuckled. Oh, he did he? Master Yupan has taught you a great deal already, whether you know it or not.
Does that mean you'll do it?
That means I'll think about it. Let me speak with Master Yupan, and I'll let you know what I can do. Okay?
Yes, my queen.
Okay. I'm starving. Have you eaten anything yet this morning?
No. I think I was a little too nervous.
Then let's go to the dining hall. I'm buying.
I beg your pardon?
It's just a joke. We really have to work on getting you relaxed.
You're really just telling me to lighten up, aren't you?
See? I looked up at her and winked. We're developing a sort of intuitive relationship already. The Queen's retreat! Zina and I had been quite busy, having no time for ourselves. First, all my time had been consumed by plans for our marriage ceremony, which had taken place the previous day. Now it seemed there was an endless number of details to go over in order to prepare for us to return to Corinth. We sat together, taking a few precious private moments together, when Ephany and Selene called on us.
The Queen's retreat?
Xena repeated after me. They should take the act on the road, maybe the Appian Way. Selene turned to Ephany and said. Ephany tried not to smile. I think she was still trying to hide the fact that she and Selene, while not officially seeing one another, had at least a mutual attraction going. It reminded me of how painful that particular parting might be when it came time to leave the Amazon village.
It was created by Dixthea, the last Amazon queen to wed during her reign. It's a cottage, really, but she built it as a wedding present for her mate. Every queen since has spent some time there when she needed a spell away from the village.
Where is it at? Why haven't we even seen it yet? I asked.
It's about a Candlemark ride away from here, up in the hills. It's a particularly beautiful area that Artemis deemed a specially sanctified spot in our forest. I think you'll see why when you see it.
When Ephany told me about this place, I thought it would be absolutely perfect, Selene added.
Perfect for what?
Xena asked. For you two, of course. You haven't had a private night to yourselves since the ceremony, and with what going back to Corinth in 2 days, I thought you two could spend at least a day or so there, some time on your own. Oh, Selene, I don't know. I so wanted to say yes, and I looked at Xena to see her reaction to the news had been. I shouldn't have wondered. She held a gleam of excitement in her eye. I kept thinking of all the things I had yet to do before leaving this village in whose capable hands? I had yet to choose a regent. I had thrust the position upon Ephany when we had been in Corinth, but now that I lived in the village and gotten to know its people, I realized that another would probably be the woman I should choose. How would I break that to Ephany? I had been stressed lately, and perhaps neglecting my spouse and family. I tried to recall Yupan's teaching about stress. He would have told me that stress came from making things more important than they are, or than they should be at any rate. I wondered if that had been my experience. Had I been concentrating too much on all the wrong things? Gods, that was another thing. What to do about mentoring Prax? I needed to speak with Yupan about that. All these thoughts helped me to decide. I think it sounds wonderful, I suddenly said, looking at Xena sitting next to me.
I agree,
she added in a restrained tone. She couldn't hide her excitement from me, however. I could tell by her almost relieved smile that she had waited, wanting to see what my answer would be before speaking. I had taken notice of her biting her tongue on more than one occasion here in Amazonia. She was accustomed to making the decisions, but she held back here where I was the ruler. I knew I wouldn't have thought of anything of it, but she constantly considered how it might look to the people I now ruled. It was a loving and respectful gesture that I would not forget. So, when do we go? I asked.
As soon as you can ready yourselves. I have a squad already prepared with horses and supplies.
Pretty sure about my response, eh, Captain? I asked.
Pretty sure you needed the time away is all.
A very diplomatic answer, my friend. It only took a short while for Xena and I to put ourselves together enough for an overnight stay. Of course, convincing Amira that she would have a better time with Cyrene and Selene took some doing. She nearly had me in tears with a forlorn expression on her face.
Don't you want me with you no more?
She said, followed by a pout.
Oh, my love, I certainly do. You and I and Xena will have lots of time to be together in Corinth, though. Besides, the day will go so quickly that you won't even notice Xena and I are gone.
Will do.
I think you're going to make your grandma Cyrene sad with this behavior.
Why will she be sad?
She straightened up slightly, seeming interested in the new news. You know that Cyrene was looking forward to you and her having a whole day and night together? Just the two of you? She's not coming to Corinth with us, and she'll miss you terribly when she goes back to her own home. In fact, Cyrene already has permission from Brina to go into the kitchens so you can help her make some special sweet pastries.
Really?
She perked up. There was a long silence.
Which kind?
She asked, still not convinced, but I could see that she was her mother's daughter. Her stomach called louder than her hurt feelings.
I think she said something about those tiny balls rolled in sugar
The ones with the red syrup inside? Oh, those are my favorite. Okay, I'll stay with Grandma Serene and Aunt Celine. Just one day, right?
Yes, Princess. Just one day. The girl definitely knew the fine art of emotional manipulation. Of that I was certain.
Oh, Xena, it's breathtaking.
I could think of no adequate words to describe the beauty of the valley we had just entered.
It must rival Olympus,
Xena replied in a voice filled with awe. She had traveled throughout most of the known world, and yet she still looked as impressed as I was at the sight. It quickly became apparent why Queen Zixthia chose such a location for the retreat. Its beauty was obvious, but as we entered the lush glade, I noticed that it was protected by sheer cliffs on both sides. The third side led up a mountain covered with a dense overgrowth of trees and thorny shrubs, nearly impossible to navigate on foot or horseback. The royal guard's job would be made much easier, since the only entrance lay through Amazon Village itself, a fact I'm sure would make Prax and Effany happy. We traversed a well-known path on horseback, passing by a stream that ran up the side of the mountain. I heard the crashing sound of a large waterfall and realized that it must lie on the other side of the mountain. When the wind was right, I could actually hear the falls from the village. Enormous trees, their magnificent boughs blowing off the sky, created a sort of soundproofing. The air was still and humid, a blanket of silence thoroughly wrapped around the area. Long green trails of moss hung down from the branches of the trees, connecting each tree to its neighbor.
It's just beautiful,
I told Daphne as we rode closer to the cottage, which looked more like a small palace to me. We dismounted in a clearing not too far from the main house. The soldiers kept riding towards what looked like to be a stable. Two of the Amazon guard took our horses down in that direction also.
They're not billeted in the stable, are they?
Xena asked.
No,
Effany answered.
Just behind the stable is a small stream. On the other side is a medium-sized barracks and dining hall. It's pretty comfortable, actually.
Effany led the way to the front doors, followed by Xena and I, with Prax only a few paces behind us. The pathway up to the home had been paved with flagstone, rough, flat pieces of rock embedded into the ground. The trees and bushes grew lush, and the entire area smelled wonderfully moist, as a forest just after the rain. When I commented on the fact, Effany explained that the massive falls on the other side of the cliffs dropped about 500 feet, spewing up a great deal of water and mist into the air. I was even more surprised by the inside of the home. It wasn't all marble columns and open-air porticos like our palace in Corinth. This place looked more like the farm homes in the Greek countryside, with an Amazon flair.
The stream runs through the inside of the house,
I said as we strolled from room to room. Indeed, through one corner of the house, the crystal-clear stream, along with its rocky bed, meandered, ending at a rather large pool complete with its own little waterfall, all inside the spacious home. I had seen the large bathing halls certain Greek and Roman noblemen had built, but I had never seen anything like this, a pool inside the house.
Built for relaxation, that's for sure,
Xena said. I think we're going to have to come back to Amazonia, just so we can stay here a little longer. Effany chuckled.
I suppose it's the only really decent spot in Amazon Nation, but we tend to think our queens are worth it.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm eternally grateful, Eff. Thanks so much for bringing us here, and thanks, Celine, for thinking of it, too.
There's a full complement of supplies in the kitchen. Brianna sent some of the girls ahead this morning and loaded you up with enough food and drink to entertain a small army.
Why don't you and Prax stay and have dinner with us, then? I asked. Perhaps without thinking, I caught the fallen expression on Xena's face. Effany and Prax looked at each other and grinned. I immediately remembered why we were there.
I think we'll leave you two alone. We have the rest of the afternoon and evening to ourselves. Besides, Brianna filled up our barracks with fresh food, too.
Are you sure I shouldn't be posted somewhere close to the house, Captain?
Prax asked.
I'm sure,
Effany replied, practically grabbing my serious-looking bodyguard by the neck.
If you two need anything, all you have to do is yell loud.
She called back from the door. Your personal guard are still stationed around the house, a discreet distance away, she added. I found it surprising the way Praxis' cheeks reddened, apparently in regards to what she thought Zena and I would be doing that evening. What surprised me about myself was that I was actually thought more about being with my wife than the fact that there would be others all around us. There had been a time when I was overly conscious of the guards around me. In my past, there had been occasions when I had been made of to perform my sexual duties before many eyes. Those days still had the ability to haunt my dreams. Of late, I had become more and more conscious of those men and women around me during the times when Zena and I were intimate. I don't know why. Perhaps merely my own demons coming to light. But just now, I realized that these guards had no wish to laugh at me or humiliate me in any way. In case of harm to me, any one of them would willingly give up their lives in my place. I suppose maybe it was the thinking which suddenly put me so much at ease. How I looked forward to this evening. Too long had it been since Zena and I had been able to enjoy one another at our leisure. "It feels wonderful," I exclaimed, only to see Zena nod in agreement. The day had turned quite warm for the rest of the end of the summer season, and the water in the pool felt delicious against my skin. Zena and I even gave in to the little girls of inside of us and started a rather playful water fight. I fought valiantly, but it was a losing battle. I wasn't too proud to say so and beg mercy. This was the side of Zena that few other people would ever see, and I thought that a shame. It was, however, something that caused me to feel quite fortunate, even special. We continued to lounge in the beautifully landscaped pool, listening to the water as it fell down the rocks. I could not even hazard a guess as to the water was continually cycled from pool to waterfall. We held one another, bathed unhurriedly, and simply relaxed with no particular agenda. Well, perhaps one agenda, but we knew that would come. It was easy to relax, with the sounds coming from outside. At first, it sounded as though musicians played just outside our doors. It turned out to be the most ingenious of devices. Pieces of hollow bamboo, along with metal tubes, hung in groups. When the breeze tossed the pieces against one another, they gave off some truly melodic sounds.
Know what I feel like doing now.
Zena came up behind me and kissed the top of my ear. I bet I can guess.
You're such a mind reader.
It was the most inopportune moment, but my stomach decided to protest my choice of priorities, or what it assumed to be my next action.
Have you eaten today?
Zena asked. Her look of concern touched my heart. I swear I had a morning meal. Prax is my witness. Sorry, love, I said after my stomach rumbled once more.
Maybe we better eat food,
she added quickly to my arched eyebrow.
We have all evening,
she reminded me.
Besides, I'm hungry myself.
Well, I suppose we should keep up our strength, I chuckled. Why don't I see what Brina's prepared for us?
Excellent idea, love.
Zena exited the pool first, and as always, I watched her body, feeling that familiar tingling warmth assail my belly. She was an incredibly beautiful woman, and I took the opportunity to tell her so.
I bet you say that to all your consorts, my queen,
she said as she offered me a hand and helped me from the pool. We wrapped ourselves up in soft towels I found in a woven basket not too far from the pool. We made our way to the rather large kitchen spice dining area. What I found there certainly stunned me into silence. I wasn't sure if it was from embarrassment or not.
Surprise!
The familiar, lilting voice rang out. Although I had only met her once, Aphrodite looked exactly the same as she had at our last meeting. Surrounded by Athena and Artemis, the trio stood around a fully laden dining table. Candles burned to enhance the romantic setting, and the smell coming from a bubbling pot hanging over the coals of the fireplace made my mouth water. Athena looked confident, Artemis, as usual, uncomfortable around mortals, and then there was Aphrodite. Her smile was infectious, but I did tug at my towel self-consciously. Her diaphanous gown did little to conceal her own naked form.
Oh, no. What are you all doing here?
Zena questioned. I suppose the goddesses had become used to Zena's ill-mannered attitude, but I couldn't bring myself to be anything but in awe. I bowed, as I always did in their presence.
Gabrielle, they're in our house, not the other way around.
Zena sounded testy, but I ignored it. She was always that way around the immortals, even more so when she had our privacy on her mind.
I call Gabrielle's behavior respectful,
Artemis said, She looked miffed as well, while Athena only smiled that mysterious smile of hers.
Forget it, sister. I gave up on her a long time ago. Getting Xena to act decorously is like trying to teach a child to dislike sweets.
I winced. Athena's analogy was sure to get Xena's temper going.
Look!
Xena took a step forward, but I intercepted her.
Calm down, love. This all looks rather innocent.
That's always the way they...
She stopped, sighed, and looked down at me. Leaning forward, she kissed my forehead.
Sorry. Don't know what came over me.
I do, I answered. We only have one night here.
I turned to Athena to say, we haven't had any time to ourselves in so long.
Xena turned towards the three goddesses.
Sorry.
She mumbled. She couldn't seem to meet their gaze.
It was never our intention to spoil your evening, ladies. In fact, Aphrodite prepared all this food from her very own recipes just to make your evening that much more pleasant. We wanted to wish you both well, since we didn't come to the ceremony yesterday.
Athena said.
Well, now I feel like an ass.
Xena said.
A good start.
Athena grinned over at Xena. The three of you will always have a place in our lives, I said. I hope you forgive our surprise at seeing you. You know that Xena meant no real disrespect.
Always watching out for me, eh?
Oh, yes. There was that, but, well, the food does smell awfully tempting. It seemed my humor was able to defuse the situation. All four women smiled at me fondly, Xena wearing that special expression that she reserved for me alone. The one that said she appreciated being taken care of, even if it was sometimes humiliating.
So, now that everybody likes everybody else, dig in, girls,
Aphrodite said. I looked longingly at the food, glanced up to the goddesses self-consciously, and once more, tugging at my towel around me, my only dress at the moment. I think Athena understood.
We'll leave you two alone. Have a wonderful evening.
Athena winked at us, and I couldn't help but blush. I don't know why, since Xena and I were married now. I suppose it was simply because I knew that she knew what we would be doing in a short while. It constantly amazed me when I acted in such a manner, acting like an innocent schoolgirl. I had been used and abused in public so often during my life of slavery. It was always a surprise that my mind even had the inclination to blush, let alone the audacity. It was, however, a most pleasant amazement. Before we could even say goodbye, the Olympians vanished, leaving behind semi-transparent sparkles where they had been standing. We took our food into the dining area and sat down to enjoy the sumptuous meal, merging the food with conversation about life in general, our futures, and our new family. I found that there existed nothing as romantic as a simple meal, affable conversation, and being alone with the woman I loved. End Gabrielle's addendum.
I sat at the small table we shared, gazing into those emerald eyes across from me. We talked about our lives, and how we wanted life to be for Amira and the other members of our new family. As I listened to Gabrielle's hopes, loves, and fears, I suddenly realized what had been happening to me. I had been falling in love all over again. The sound of her voice, the way her eyes shone, and the golden color of her hair by the light of the candle, it all made me realize that this was not a mere physical attraction. I loved and needed this woman for so much more than simply sex, although I will be honest, just then it was rather high on my to-do list.
More?
Gabrielle said as she rose and indicated the empty bowl before me. I wasn't really one to have more than one serving, but I felt myself uncharacteristically famished. I think I will. Here, let me. I stood and grabbed both of our bowls, much to my wife's astonishment. Hey, I can serve it up as long as someone else does the cooking. We both laughed and I headed back to the kitchen. When I walked through the beaded curtain that separated the kitchen from the dining area, I nearly ran into Athena. She stood there near the fireplace, bending over the cooking pot. Lose something? I asked. I always thought the immortals knew everything ahead of time, but Athena actually jumped when she heard my voice.
What do you mean, sneaking up on me?
I beg your pardon. Isn't this our house?
Very funny.
Well?
I asked. I wouldn't have pressed her, but she stood directly in front of the cooking pot and the stew I wanted.
Oh, I...
Her eyes darted around the room, and I just knew she was going to lie to me. I forgot something. Really? What exactly did you forget? Again, her eyes scanned the room.
This!
She quickly grabbed an object from the mantel over the fireplace. That vase is yours?
Yes, in fact, it's a family heirloom.
Right.
Look, just eat your dinner.
I would if...
I indicated with one hand that she blocked my way.
Oh, well, I better go.
Saying that, she disappeared, clutching the vase. I thought about her strange behavior, but not for long. Suddenly, all I can think of was having more food. I suppose if I'd taken the time to think about that unusual desire, I could have avoided a certain amount of pain I was to suffer later. Gabrielle and I wolfed down a second bowl of stew, and I once more returned to the kitchen. We decided that one more serving wouldn't hurt.
Oh, no!
I exclaimed upon seeing Artemis in much the same spot Athena had been in. Let me guess. An old family heirloom? I reached out and lifted up the closest vase, which appeared suddenly like the one Athena had been made off with.
Why in Tartarus would I want an old piece of pottery like that? Have you lost your mind?
Sorry.
Private joke. Can I help you?
I just...
Forgot something?
Yes, that's it.
What exactly did you forget?
Something that...
She turned her head, searching the room. How could the goddesses lie so badly? And why?
I thought I forgot it, but turns out, well, I didn't.
I see.
Well then.
She swiped at the air with one hand, looking a little like she was waving goodbye. All at once, I stood there alone.
God!
I muttered, spooting out more of the delectable stew.
Does it feel awfully hot in here?
Gabrielle asked. I had actually been thinking the same thing myself, but I had already opened the doors out to the garden, and a cooling breeze blew into the room. It did nothing, however, to cool my burning skin, and I wiped the perspiration from my brow. I was thinking the same thing, maybe just the spices in the stew. I continued to kiss her neck, ignoring my escalating body temperature, which just happened to be matching my increasing libido. We moved to the living area. Pillows and couches near set the fireplace. We had no need for fire, so we shed our clothes and reclined upon the many pillows spread out on the floor. Neither one of us felt any inhibitions, even though our soldiers stood guard somewhere outside of the house. I didn't think particularly odd, however, considering that some time had passed since Gabrielle and I had been able to let loose and make love as freely as we had back in Corinth.
I guess maybe it's been way too long since we've done this then.
She shivered as I hit a particularly sensitive spot behind her ear.
I'm out of shape.
I know what you mean. I mumbled. My skin feels like it's on fire.
I took Gabrielle in my arms, pulling her back against me, groaning at the feel of her hot skin against mine.
It's definitely been too long.
I added in a husky voice. I felt as a trickle of wetness from my sex. I wanted to know if Gabrielle felt the same, so I pulled her hips back, grinding myself against her. Her back pressed against my breast, and I felt my nipples grow hard at the contact. Easily reaching my fingers down between her legs, I groaned once more, as if in pain at the exquisite wetness pouring from Gabrielle. How we had become so excited that fast was unexpected, but no surprise. It had indeed been a long while. It had grown almost painful how much I felt myself wanting Gabrielle. I didn't know what to do first. I wanted to do it all. Use my lips, fingers, and tongue. I had my hands across Gabrielle's body, barely giving her time to concentrate on one area of pleasure before I moved on. Quickly, I pulled her backward until she was lying on the bed, and I moved over her, placing kisses and running my fingertips across every area of bare skin, pausing at those spots that I knew she found pleasurable. I felt her body like a taut bowstring under my fingertips. It fairly hummed with passion, her body writhing and her hips lifting from the mattress, silently begging for my attention. I gave it gladly. My kisses moved down her body as though the scent of her excitement was a noose around my neck. Not that I had been to be forced or drawn between her legs involuntarily. Just as I dipped my head, Gabrielle stopped me.
"Turn around,"
she whispered in a rather frantic tone. I turned my body and positioned my sex over Gabrielle's face. This was no time for gentle and unhurried discovery. We were much too excited for that.
beyond any reasonable thought. Using my fingers to part the delicate pink folds, I lowered my head and reached my tongue out to taste her. Gabrielle grasped my hips, pulling me down to meet her waiting tongue. Just as when our skin had first touched, we groaned loudly at the lightning bolt feel of the contact, tongues working in furious unison. I worked to bring her to climax while fighting to prolong my own pleasure. I was fighting a losing battle, though. Easing my tongue forward, Gabrielle's sweet taste spurring me on, I slipped my hands underneath her hips to pull her more firmly to me. It was at that moment when my brain slipped from concentrating on pleasuring Gabrielle to feeling the intense satisfaction of my own pleasure. I felt the warm wetness of Gabrielle's tongue. First she tasted, swirling a tongue against all those most sensitive spots. Then she pulled down on my hips, and I felt her tongue enter me. My hips suddenly began their unconscious dance, swirling and grinding against the tongue pleasuring me. It was too much pleasure, too soon. I felt my climax rushing upon me much faster than I would have liked.
Gabrielle!
I paused in my own task, hoping to stave off the rise of intense gratification that had me so close to the edge. Gabrielle never stopped. Knowing me as she did, I'm sure she knew what my shaking body and tightened muscles signaled. Her teeth pressed down against my swollen clit, her tongue continually pressing inside me. I gripped the bedclothes as I felt her tongue licking across my clit in more powerful, forceful strokes. Closing my eyes, I remembered wishing that I could have continued pleasing Gabrielle, but the waves of delight pounded me to the bottom of the surf, and I nearly lost my breath. My body jerked, my muscles tightened, and releasing involuntarily. I must have simply frozen in place, because I felt Gabrielle gently roll me off of her and onto the bed. I couldn't even speak as I waited for my body to recover from the intense climax.
"Are you all right?"
she asked, stroking my forehead. I nodded, but after a small while, speech returned to me.
"God!"
was all I could say at the time. I noticed that Gabrielle still breathed rather heavily. I cursed my selfishness at taking my pleasure first, when all I really wanted had been to please her. Well, it wasn't all I wanted, although I did want it a great deal. The odd thing was that although I had just experienced an extremely powerful climax, I felt nowhere near sated. All I can think was how much I still wanted the woman beside me.
"Much better,"
I said as I quickly pushed Gabrielle back onto the bed, beginning once again where I had started. I licked my lips in eager anticipation. I was ready to come again, or to be brought to that point at any rate. But I wanted to do this for Gabrielle. Wanted to take my time. Sliding my palms up the inside of her thighs, I allowed my fingers to bring Gabrielle back to her previous level of excitement. Her body had begun to flush with desire, and a light sheen of perspiration covered her skin. There was nothing as sensual as a woman who enjoyed giving pleasure as well as receiving it. Gabrielle had spent her life giving, and I took a particular pleasure at seeing her receive.
"Just a moment,"
I said, moving away for a moment.
"Zena!"
Gabrielle's voice held a combination of frustration and anguish.
"Close your eyes,"
I commanded, jumping up from the bed. She immediately did as I requested. It took me a few moments to find out what I'd been looking for.
"Lift,"
I said when I returned, easing her hips up with one hand. I slid a thick pillow underneath her, tilting her hips up at just the right angle. Gabrielle had not been the only one of us to possess superior skill in lovemaking. Although I had let her lead in most of our sessions, that was about to end on this evening, albeit temporarily. Tonight, I wanted her on my terms and in my way. Besides, I had been told that I possessed some talent in this particular pleasure, and it was always rather stirring to perform it on a woman who didn't expect or demand it, but found it to be an exhilarating bonus. My belly tightened with desire. Gabrielle's scent did more than urge me on. It was actually appetizing. I found myself needing to do this, almost craving her taste once more.
"So beautiful,"
I whispered as I looked down and examined her sex. Soft curls, the color of amber honey, were soaked with Gabrielle's own resplendent moisture. When I ran the tip of my tongue along the delicate folds, I felt the gathering of moisture from my own body as well. I looked along the edges first, looking on her sex as one of the rare and precious flowers in my rose garden. Slowly, and with great care, I unveiled her petals, exploring with only the touch of my tongue. I nearly lost myself in the pleasure of this mere act alone, but for Gabrielle's strained voice.
Xena, please.
She begged in a voice that shook with restrained passion. Lifting her hips in a silent plea for more, she moaned with delight when I took one long, languid stroke against the swollen area at the top of her cleft. I wrapped my arms under her hips, sliding my palms upward. My surprise came out as a groan against the lips of her sex when I found her own hands already massaging her breasts. I couldn't resist gazing up to watch her. I began to time the strong licks of my tongue with the way she tugged and pulled on her nipples. Legs trembling, she began forcefully thrusting her hips upward while intermittently grinding them against my mouth in a circular rotating motion. I had honestly meant to make more time, but our combined passions simply couldn't hold out. Suddenly, Gabrielle cried out just as loudly as I had earlier. I wasn't about to let her climax end there, however. Before she came down from her second climax, I moved on top of her. Her eyes opened wide, suddenly realizing what that long something was that lay on top of her thigh, and I smiled down at her, waiting for her reaction. She gasped slightly. I wouldn't have even thought of using such a thing if I hadn't the idea that Gabrielle would enjoy it. She had often used a phallus on me during our lovemaking, but had never requested that I return the pleasure. Carefully watching her for any sign or fear of resistance, I reached down and kissed her. Gabrielle didn't waste any time. She wrapped her arms around my neck, and when our open mouths met, her tongue searched for mine. Wrapping one leg around my waist, she bucked her hips upward, almost grinding herself against the custom-made phallus.
"Yes, Xena, please!"
she pleaded without any hint of shame. It was now obvious that Gabrielle wanted this just as much as I had. I let the phallus slide along the length of her drenched sex. She gasped and then moaned as I pressed into her more fully. I stopped pushing, pulling back ever so slightly. There was a clear desperation in her voice now, as she used words that she rarely uttered.
"By the God, Xena! Please, Xena! God! Fuck me!"
Spreading her legs open and lifting them at the same time, it allowed me to easily enter her. She spread her legs wider, thrusting upward, and the phallus impaled her. Gabrielle cried out, but it was a sound of relief and pleasure, not pain. Once I was sure of that, I moved my hips, pushing in and pulling out. Repeating those exact movements, my own wetness increased as the phallus pressed up against my own sex. We both groaned and moaned, and called out to as many gods that we knew. We fell into a rhythm, punctuated only by Gabrielle's pleas of harder or deeper. The intensity, especially coming from her, surprised me. If I thought this would be some gentle, loving act, I would have been wrong. It was certainly loving, but it was anything but tender. We pushed and pressed against one another. I gasped in both pain and pleasure when Gabrielle pinched my nipples, pulling at them roughly. I used my teeth and tongue to return the favor. The rhythm picked up, and I finally let Gabrielle control the pace, meeting each of her demands for more.
"God, you feel so good inside me,"
Gabrielle rasped with a ferocious sort of intensity. Her words, some of them rough and demanding, were all it took for me. I had been holding back my orgasm since nearly the first moment when I had entered Gabrielle. The sound I made as I climaxed could only have been described as a howl. I'm uncertain if it was the noises I made or the hard thrusts of my hips as I came, but it was enough to send Gabrielle off into her own climactic abyss. Her entire body shivered and shook. I believe she would have screamed if her voice hadn't grown raw from her continual pleadings. I laid slumped over her still panting body for some time before I could hear my brain enough to force my own body into the slightest action. I slid the phallus from her, listening as she made a mewing sound in its absence. Rolling onto my back, I pulled Gabrielle into my arms. She settled her head into the crook of my neck, and we remained still until our breathing came close to being normal.
"Oh, God,"
I finally said as I chuckled in amazement.
"What?"
"Want to hear something totally and utterly insane?"
"Hmm?"
"It's too embarrassing."
"Xena, it's me,"
Gabrielle laughed.
"What could be that bad?"
I want to do that again.
Good.
She leaned up on one elbow, looking down at me. I mean, I want to do it again. Right now.
Good.
She said again. But this time, an almost feral smile spread her lips. It was to be only the beginning of a very long night. One very long, pleasurable night. Somewhere along the way, the pleasure turned somewhat painful as we grew sore from the prolonged contact, but we still couldn't seem to get enough of one another. Our bodies, thankfully, knew better than we did. We each passed out around the same time, blessedly before we could hurt ourselves beyond repair. At the time, I didn't even have the strength to wonder at our odd behavior. To be continued.
Well, that concludes chapter 44 of the Conquer series, Time Spell Hand, by the late L.J. Moss, and that is episode 76 of XNU. I hope everyone's enjoyed that. As you noticed, if you've been following along by reading with us, we only have two more chapters left, which means we only have two more episodes left on the Times Fell Hand series by the late L.J. Moss, and then we will be going back to finish up A Matter of Pride by Melissa Good, and then I will be reading my story online that you guys have kindly voted by reading it over in the Athenaeum as one of the number one story. So thank you once again for everyone for doing that. If you have any song suggestions, please send them on in. Also, if you have any book reviews or movie reviews, send them in. You don't have to be my book hoe or my book wench or anything like that. Just send them on in. And if you have any suggestions for the show or anything, or if you just want to send an announcement or a dedication, go ahead and send me an email at zena.uber@gmail.com. So until the next episode, everyone, take care, enjoy life and love. Bye-bye. Just a touch of you. When I tear myself away, I'm brave in the rain and runs away in the skin with no consequence. If I could have just a taste of you, would I be addicted?